Again, I'm nasty and I'm a recovering addict, and y'all know I wasn't going to let her run this stuff. Well, we'd like to thank our first speaker, Kia B, I think. Thank you for sharing about this personal journey, this honesty, open-minded, and willingness. And it is about this personal journey. Sometimes you got to pull yourself up by the bootstraps, your own bootstraps. And that's what we're talking about today. So the key is to carry us the rest of the way. Enid O. Come on, man. I'm getting some help.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Enid, and I'm an addict. And thank you for saying my name right. The only time I get pissed is if somebody calls me Edna. And it took a long time for me to forgive my mother for naming me Enid. But you know what? I like what it means. What it means is soul. You know, and I want to just share this with you. Live your life from your heart, not from your head. Share from your heart, not from your head. And your story will touch and heal people's souls. I hope so. Okay. How does this program work? It works great if I'm willing to work it. But the bottom line is, after 24 years, I don't work this program. This program works me. You know? I'm on my 10th go-around on the steps because some of us are sicker than others. And in 24 years, I've had 10 different sponsors because I always had a problem with commitment. I've been married and divorced 3 times. And I'd say I'm a 3-time winner, not a 3-time winner. Yeah. But here's the really sick part. Every time I got married, I knew I was going to get divorced. But somehow or another, I decided that I'd be better off being divorced 3 times than never being married at all. Yeah, sick shit. and they were all in active addiction. All my ex-husbands were either addicts, alcoholics, or drug dealers. And I went along for the ride. And I will share with you what a long, strange trip it has been. I want to talk about honesty first. My family of origin, my father was a salesman. So what that meant was that the credo in our house was life was about what you could get away with. And by putting things over on people, you'd literally get your rocks off. And it was this game, you know. But I felt pulled because there was a part of me, I guess, that I had some values that said it just isn't right to live this way. You know, so it was always that I was pulled in both directions. But today what happens is when I put something over on someone or I get away with something, I convince myself in my addict brain that it was God's will and it wasn't my will, you know. Because I realized that God gives me free will, right? And with free will, I could either do God's will or self-will. And when it works out to my advantage, it's definitely God's will. You're right. So I always made this big thing about being honest with people. But there's another kind of honesty. And that kind of honesty is honesty to the point of recklessness. Brutal honesty. Where I would say and do things to hurt you. But oddly enough, most of the time I'd be hurting myself more than I'd be hurting you. And as an example, I can tell you that in 24 years of recovery, I've been fired for 6 jobs. And it had nothing to do with drugs. It had to do with this thing between my 2 ears. You know, and that was because I had to say what I had to say, regardless of the consequences of that kind of behavior. So one of the hardest lessons for me to learn, and I'm still learning it, and now I'm not only practicing it, but I'm applying it. There's a big difference between practicing and applying. is, please listen here, everything that comes into my head needn't come out of my mouth. Now, this doesn't mean that I keep secrets. It just means that I don't act on impulse. You know, and for years in recovery, as well as in active addiction, that's, you know, I self-actualized, which is what I called acting on impulse. For instance, I decided it would be a good idea to travel with the Grateful Dead for 7 years. And needless to say, I had a wonderful time. I still listen to the music. I'm what they call a wharf rat today, which are the deadheads in recovery. Oh, good. I already have one. We'll talk later. I have a bunch of bootleg. And I still blast the music. But I don't need to go out and get loaded in order to enjoy it today. You know. And then I graduated. I graduated from the Grateful Dead. And I got this bug up my ass that I like reggae music. And as a result, I decided, oh, I'm going to go live in Jamaica with Rastafarians. And so I did. And what I can remember of it, the best thing that I remember is that, first of all, I was the only white woman in this ghetto called Flanka outside of Montego Bay. And the way we were able to take a shower is there was this zinc covering, and my friends would put a hose over the top, and that's how you would take a shower, which wasn't nearly as bad as when you had to go to the bathroom. And I usually have to go up the hill. The second Rasta that I lived with lived in what they call the captured land. And you know how they capture land in Jamaica? See this piece of property? This is my land. And the latrine there was this big hole in the ground, and it was covered in zinc, except on the top. And then it had boards across it, and you'd have to open this door and walk across these boards and kind of maneuver yourself, which was quite a feat, you know, and it was very interesting. And the best part about it was above the hill from where he lived, there was another family, and they were able to look over and see what was going on. I'd always wave, but I was worried I'd fall into the hole. All right. My honesty today is about just letting you see who I am, you know. And I am the sum total of all my life experiences, you know. And I don't regret a single thing. I don't regret a single thing. And I'll give you an example. One of the gentlemen that I lived with in Jamaica gave me the gift that keeps on giving. For those of you who don't know, that's herpes. And fortunately, for the last 20 years, I've been, you know, outbreak free. But as a result of that, when I was popped for muling marijuana from Montego Bay to Miami the fourth time I got popped, of the three I got through, because, you know, I put something over on somebody, I ended up spending time in Women's Detention Center in Miami. And back in 83, they put HIV and herpes in the same bed. So as a result, I spent most of the time in solitary confinement, and I no longer look at Reader's Digest or eat white bread. So more recently, I re-met someone who I didn't realize I knew from 2 years ago, and one of the first things out of this gentleman's mouth was that he shared with me that he had herpes, and it was like a thrill. It was like, oh my God, somebody was willing to tell me first, you know, and rather than after the fact. And so I said, oh, so do I. And he says, oh, don't worry, most people in the program have it anyway. I'd ask for a show of hands, but it's so open-mindedness. Okay. Moving right along. The next subject we're going to discuss is open-mindedness. And I will tell you that I was anything but open-minded when I came into this program, because I came into this program because I was paid to bring you, but thank God I stayed for me. That's right. After getting tired of burying children from AIDS at the South Florida AIDS Network in Miami, I decided to apply for a job as a clinician in a detox facility, and guess what? my higher power knew exactly what he was doing. It was like he said to me, what the f*** do I need to let you know that you have a problem? All right, I'll give you a job as a clinician in a detox facility. And that's exactly what happened, you know. And for years, I would sit where you're sitting, and rather than listen to you, I identified out and thought about, what glittering profundities can come out of my mouth so I can impress you? Oh, man, did I lose? I lost so much. And it wasn't until around, I would have to say, 14 or 16 years that all of a sudden the light came on and said, what the are you doing? You know, you're not opening yourself up to the possibility of being teachable. So I'll tell you what happens today. I walk into a room and I look for the connection. I be like a sponge, you know, and I know that my higher power speaks through you. So I listen. I had to learn to listen and listen to learn, you know, and it's been probably the most valuable experience through this program, that I've learned to listen and keep my mouth shut. I want to talk about willingness. You know, I used to have to pray for the willingness to be willing. You know, it's very difficult when, you know, I came into this program and I already had one master's degree. I was working on the second. And I eventually went on to be from pole hole digger to piled higher and deeper to getting a PhD. I often like to say I'm a doctor, but not the kind that does anybody any good, but that's not true. No. I just wanted to be good enough, smart enough, and now thin enough so that I would like myself. No. It really didn't matter what you thought, but it was that I would like myself. Because I grew up in a situation where whatever I did, it wasn't good enough. You know? And so the willingness came this year when I did a step 9, and there was only one name on that step 9, and that was me. And the amends I made to myself was I decided to get healthy. And as a result, I lost about 60 pounds. How do you like me now? And you know, and I feel really great. And just like Kia, I went out and I bought lots of clothes. But I made myself feel good because everything else I gave away. You know, so that kind of, you know, I always would say to my daughter, you can't buy new clothes unless you have an empty hanger. You know, so rather than going out and buying hangers, I'd say give away clothes. So that's what I did. You know, I donated a lot of clothes. But this caveat to that is that I can't gain weight back because then I don't have those clothes anymore. You know, and the other part of that willingness was that I was willing to take my recovery show on the road, if you know what I mean. And, you know, I got to be careful because it used to be, you know, you talk about people who, in this program, who don't trust people. I was just the opposite. I was so vulnerable and so trusting that I would let anybody and anything into my life because I was going to fix, save, and rescue you. Forget about me. And I remember when I moved to Carson City, Nevada. I've also lived 5 different places in 24 years. That way, you know, nobody could get to know me. No, that's not true. I just collected people along the way. So I go to this meeting in Carson City, Nevada, and literally it's like I walk in there and I say, excuse me, would the sickest fuck in the room please raise your hand? And that's what I went after, you know. Hey, I'm being honest, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I could fix, save, and rescue.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. But willingness today is definitely a different piece. My willingness today is to put aside, you know, what Living Clean talks about. You know, my disease is my distortion of my ideas, my attitudes, and my behaviors. You know, and so I work on those today. You know, I really work on that. And the way I work on it is when a thought comes into my mind, I replace it with something else. Sometimes it's doing for you. Sometimes it's prayer. Sometimes it's meditation. I have a load of tools in my toolkit today, you know. And I use them. I use them because I have no choice. I don't want to backslide into old behaviors. You know, and part of this taking my recovery show on the road, you know, I don't want backsliding to step two. You know, and step two for me in terms of meeting someone was living in the insanity and unmanageability of, excuse me, same shit, different dick. And, you know, I did say that, I'm sorry. I did. You know, and I don't want to backslide into that behavior because emotionally it's very painful. And my bottom wasn't necessarily a drug bottom, it was an emotional bottom. After I 13th step, not one, but two gentlemen in the detox facility where I was working and sent them to different programs. And after one relapsed and said, oh, can I borrow $80 in your Jeep? I need to interview for a job. 3 days later, you know, and I don't do that anymore. I don't do that, you know, because it ain't worth it. And it's not that the thought doesn't cross my mind, you know, it's that I don't have to act out on those behaviors. Because today, after 24 years, it's a lot more painful to deal with that. Yeah. And the other thing I want to talk about is I'm what they call a Fed. I work for the federal government. And so I hope nobody gets a hold of this CD and gives it to them because they don't know that I was in jail. When I walked out, the bailiff said to me, don't worry, lady, charges dropped, case dismissed, credit for time served. So I don't have to report that. You know? And I've been blessed enough to be able to give back and get paid for it, you know? As I said, I've been working in the field longer than I've been clean. So, we live in a lot of acronyms in the federal government. So I found another three words that I can use for HOW. Healing Original Wound. You know, and that's really what it's been about for me. The original wound of how I was raised or what I walked through, you know, in early childhood. And working on myself has given me the opportunity to walk through that pain and come through on the other side. And when I think of all the things that I've gone through in my life, you know, and a lot of them in recovery, in the first 5 years I lost both my parents and three grandparents. You know, I've had two bankruptcies, and I lost a house. As I already told you, I've been fired from six jobs in recovery. You know, but my life is very different today, you know. I'm a nice person today, you know. I used to be my own worst enemy. Today I can be my own best friend. I have this sponsee in Arizona, and she always likes to say how she has this itty-bitty shitty committee in her head, you know. And some people have a city. No, not me. I have a friggin' corporation. I manufacture my own misery, and I buy my own bullshit. So I don't live like that today. Now, mind you, it's not that I don't think about it. I just don't have to act out on it, you know. And I live my life very peacefully today. You know, my therapist says, Enid, you are developing discernment. You know, that means if it looks like, tastes like, smells like shit, probably it's shit. Doesn't mean that, you know, I can turn a red light into a yellow light, into a green light, you know. And it's not my job to fix, save, or rescue anybody today, you know. And I want to share an irony with you. I was always I'm the eldest of three, the only daughter. I have two baby brothers that I raised. And I was always the screwed up one, you know. And I could never do anything right. My father even had convinced me that the only reason I got into college was because he sold chemicals to the maintenance man. I mean, it made no sense at all. But anyway, so I raised my two brothers because my dad was always on the road selling or hiring people, and my mom was a closet alcoholic and addict until she got sick. Then we could talk about it and just say she was sick. So both my brothers got married, and my baby brother, who I'm really close with, recently was diagnosed with bladder cancer. And he was like, he's just a really good person, you know. And the woman that he had married was just like our father. They are since divorced. They have two twin girls. One of them who continuously tries to commit suicide, and my brother's still in the hospital after having his bladder and prostate removed. And I realized the only thing I can do is just be there and pray for him. And talk about powerlessness, you know. And then my other brother, who both he and his wife love the same person, so they're fine. It's true. So they have a 23-year-old daughter who was originally like one in the top 10 in New Jersey in gymnastics, who now has a very, very intense eating disorder, and a 13-year-old son who heavy-duty ADHD. And now here I am with this incredible 29-year-old daughter who I pretty much raised in this program. And I should tell you, she's what we call a Jew-Macon, because I'm Jewish and her father's Jamaican, so she's original. I always had to be different, you know. I also suffered from terminal uniquity, so if I could do something different or unusual, I went out of my way to do it. So anyway, Molly is the apple of my eye. You know, I often think it was the one thing I did right. And I know if my parents were still alive, they would probably say, how the hell did you end up with the good kid? And they're all screwed up. But I also know they'd be very proud of me today. So this walk for me has been about healing my original wound, you know, and doing it through honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. Thank you for letting me share.